Kayo'y nakikinig sa SBS Filipino.
With me today is Professor Beth Strating from La Trobe University, and we're going to talk about one of her favorite topics again, the South China Sea. Good day.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming by. First of all, fresh from the Philippines, and you were in a conference about the South China Sea. Can you tell us what the mood was like?
Yeah, so I was at the Manila Dialogue on the South China Sea. This is the first dialogue of its kind being held in the Philippines. And we had a couple of days with policy experts, academics, officials, talking through the dynamics that are occurring in the South China Sea. And it was very interesting because on the first day of the conference, we found out that Trump had been elected in the United States. So I think for the first day, we were all kind of a little bit shell-shocked, I think, in terms of wondering what this might mean for the South China Sea, but also in terms of wondering what this might mean for security and economic dynamics in Asia more broadly, and what it might mean for the Philippines, what it might mean for Australia, and what it might mean for other allies and partners and countries in Asia. But it was a really interesting time to be in the Philippines, to be talking about the South China Sea, because there's just so much that's been going on in terms of the Philippines trying to raise attention, the world's attention on China's assertive actions in the West Philippine Sea, particularly around Second Thomas Shoal. You're sort of seeing almost daily reports of encounters between, you know, whether it's vessels or officials or coast guards, navy. And so part of this Manila dialogue, I think, is about trying to shed a light on these issues and draw the world's attention to what is going on.
When Tristan Tariella of the Coast Guard came to Canberra, he did mention that transparency issue, and he reckons it's a good step for the Philippines so that the world would know what's happening. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's something over the last 18 months that the Philippines has really pursued through Commodore Tairella, the Coast Guard spokesman, has been pursuing this transparency agenda. And part of it is about countering things like mis and disinformation. Part of it is also about trying to get clarity around rule of law in issues around maritime disputes in the South China Sea. It's a very different approach, though, to the one that we saw from the Duterte administration, which sought to, I guess, keep some of these issues quiet while they did deals on sort of economic issues and Belt and Road and things like that with Beijing. So we're seeing a shift, and the Philippines is really at the forefront of all of the Southeast Asian countries in trying to push back against the use of grey zone tactics, as they're sometimes called, in the South China Sea.
So you mentioned that during the Duterte administration, they kept it a bit quiet and calm because they needed leverage or help when negotiating with other economic-related issues. Do you think that that would put, like, a dent to the current relationship?
I think that under the current administration of Marcos Jr., the balance between sort of security and economic imperatives has shifted. The perspectives have sort of changed. This idea of needing to compromise on key security issues in order to make economic gains is not so much a calculation that this administration is prepared to make, unlike the Duterte administration. So there is, I think, a recognition at the same time that the Philippines does need to engage in dialogue with Beijing. So there has been, you know, provisional agreements that have been made in the South China Sea dispute in order to try to dial down the temperature. And there are channels of communication between the Philippines and in China. But the current administration has really drawn a line in the sand around compromising what it sees as its sovereign national security interests. So it won't compromise on those in order to get deals. But I also think this reflects that some of the shine on the Belt and Road initiative has also been tarnished. The promises that were being made and the reach of the Belt and Road Initiative and how China sort of presented this as meeting the economic and development needs of countries across the world, those promises and commitments haven't quite been met everywhere. So some of the image around China as being the primary development partner may have also shifted over the last couple of years as well.
So what was the mood like? Because in that conference, it wasn't just the Philippines that was there.
That's right.
It was everyone at stake in the South China Sea issue. What was the mood like?
Yeah, so it was interesting. I mean, I think my sense from the Philippines and the contingent from the Philippines is that perhaps Trump isn't so bad for the Philippines. And that seems to be some of the signals that I'm getting out of things like looking at social media and responses to the US election. But there are certainly other people at the conference that I attended from other countries that were a bit more concerned. And, you know, there were some Americans at that conference that were also concerned about what this might mean for the United States' relationships with countries in Asia and whether or not countries in Asia will continue to see the United States as a reliable or a credible partner when, you know, we know that the first Trump administration was a bit chaotic and, you know, that he withdrew from, say, the Trans-Pacific Partnership and was doing things like, you know, creating peace summits between South Korea and North Korea that didn't really go anywhere. It was a bit erratic on the issue of the South China Sea. You know, his administration did start undertaking more freedom of navigation operations against China in the South China Sea. But Trump himself perhaps doesn't really seem that concerned about the South China Sea in and of itself. But very clearly, his new administration is it looks like from what we can see So far, he's wanting people in his administration who are quite anti-China, quite on the hawkish side of national security.
Defense Secretary Gilbert Schnorr was in Australia a few weeks ago, and he did mention that he doesn't see any changes in the agreement in the U.S. policy between America and the Philippines because there is a bipartisan agreement. Mm. Some say it's a bit hopeful. What do you think?
Yeah, it's. I think there may be an element of wishful thinking that nothing will necessarily change under a new administration. I think it's perfectly reasonable, though, for an official to come out and say that. That is a. If I were the defense minister in the Philippines, I would say the same thing publicly too. Like we've got to recognize that, you know, he's part of what the Philippines and other countries in the region will be doing is trying to make sure that the US stays anchored in Asia. You don't want to kind of irritate the administration first off the bat. But we also have to remember that it was during the Trump administration where the West Philippine Sea was sort of it was confirmed that that area would that the US saw that as being part of the mutual defense treaty. So if we take that, we can see that there is, you know,
significant interest as well.
Exactly. So the key issue here really is what would a Trump administration do in the event of conflict? I mean, it's crucial for Taiwan, but it is also crucial for the Philippines because these two countries are really at the forefront. They're at the coalface of China's sort of assertions and aggressions in East Asia.
Given that situation, wouldn't you think, like, coming from a civilian's perspective, wouldn't it be better if the Asian countries who have the same interests put up an alliance?
That's a fascinating question. So the first thing I would say is that no states have perfectly aligned interests. And that's part of the challenge with building alliances. It's part of the challenge of cooperation, achieving cooperation between countries, is that they have their own sort of national interests, and it can be hard, given the diversity of views and perspectives and interests, economic circumstances, culture, to build these robust alliances that can be sustainable despite the differences across these countries. So alliances in Asia have been quite difficult historically to achieve. Asia doesn't have a NATO like what the United States has with European countries. Instead, what the United States did in Asia was create this bilateral system of alliances. So the United States and Japan, the United States and the Philippines, the United States and Australia, the United States and Korea. But we can tell that those alliances are not between Asian countries. They're between the United States and individual countries. And so I think your question is really important, because what we will probably see, and what I would like to see, is these countries that are allies and partners of the United States working much closer together. We're seeing that with Australia and Japan, for example. We might see some trilateral cooperations forming between Australia, Japan and South Korea, or between Australia, Japan and the Philippines. There's been a push in this direction, which is basically to hedge against dependence on the United States. If the United States looks like it's going to go down a more isolationist America First policy direction, then these countries are going to have to work closer together, particularly if their shared interest is their concern about China.
And how will this current situation, would you say, affect the strategic relationship between the Philippines and Australia?
Oh, that's interesting, because there's been a lot of growth in that relationship, particularly under the Marcos administration. There has been a new depth to the partnership between Australia and the Philippines, and participating in things like joint exercises and patrols. These are good ways of strengthening trust between the two countries. So that may continue, I would imagine, in the context of a Trump administration leading the United States, because it will be imperative on all countries that have strong relationships with the United States to be working with other countries that have some aligned interests, particularly when it comes to things like regional security and stability.
With these alliances, America and the Philippines, Australia and the Philippines, is it sending a message to China as well, that we are stronger now and we remain firm in our resolve?
Yep. Yeah. So part of what these countries are trying to do is knit together a network that is prepared to deter China from making unilateral actions that change the status quo. So what they mean by that is essentially changing the facts on the ground to China's advantage. And the transparency agenda of the Philippines is part of this deterrence mechanism. It's part of saying, we don't accept what China is doing. We see these tactics as being illegal and coercive. They are unacceptable. Under international law, this is, the Philippines' viewpoint, that these are that what China is doing is pushing the Philippines out of maritime space that it is entitled to under international law. And so there is definitely a message to Beijing in that is, we do not tolerate or we do not accept the claims that China is making and the actions that China is undertaking in order to assert those claims. And so it's, you know, it's part of the reason why China has ramped up its actions, its grey zone tactics in the South China Sea. It's trying to pressure the Philippines to back down. The Vietnam, in contrast, has been much quieter about the grey zone, isn't getting quite as much pressure being placed on it from China because it has adopted a different strategy. But that is not to say that one is necessarily better than the other, that it's better to keep quiet or that it's better to amplify what's going on. The key question is, how do we measure the effectiveness of the Philippines' transparency agenda? So you can say, well, on the first hand, it's definitely achieved its goal of making the international community and global media much more aware of what's going on. But if the goal is to pressure China to back down on its South China Sea claims, we'll have to wait and see on that one. But at the moment, there's, you know, as I said, there's a joint sort of provisional arrangement that that Beijing and Manila developed around resupply in the second Thomas Shoal, designed to stop any kind of escalation of conflict. But around the time that they came up with that agreement, things, you know, China moved its tactics towards the Sabina Shoal, sorry. And so it's
like
difficult.
Chess.
Yeah, it is like chess, and it is, it's difficult to say at this point in time whether or not the transparency agenda will be effective in achieving that longer-term goal of ensuring the Philippines' rights under international law as a first point, and second, getting China to reduce the operational tactics and pressure that it's exerting on the Philippines.
What does conferences and dialogues like you've previously attended to do for the progression of the talks and the situation in the South China Sea?
Well, sometimes they offer the opportunity for experts to create concrete recommendations that policymakers can try and use, new ideas, fresh ideas in navigating these tensions. That is one part of the dialogue, is that experts can develop new plans, new sort of ideas for policymakers. But the other thing about these dialogues that's really interesting is that people like me, academics like me, we can say things that officials can't. So you can have...
It must be an interesting dialogue.
That's right. So that's another real benefit from these dialogues, is that the nature of the conversation, you might be able to have a more frank conversation. But there are some points now, and I've attended a lot of conferences on this issue over the last decade or so, and sometimes we fall into the rut of sort of talking around the same sets of issues and talking past each other. And that was quite clear to me, was that partly our issues are that when people across Asia and the United States are talking to China about maritime affairs, they're coming from sort of completely different views. And so it's difficult to even get on the same page on some of these issues. But that's not to say that dialogue isn't extremely important, because it is extremely important, particularly as things get more tense and as strategic competition grows. The impetus for getting people in the room and trying to understand perspectives is only more important.
Do you see China being a part of this in the future?
Well, there were Chinese analysts who were at this conference, and it's very important to have that representation. It's very important to try and understand where there might be avenues for cooperation rather than going down a pathway of conflict or only seeing things as purely oppositional all the time. It's particularly important as things heat up because you want things like hotlines in case of crisis, for example. Hotlines between officials might be able to prevent something from escalating, because the last thing we want to see is some sort of conflict breaking out in our region because people are responding to crisis and there's no way to communicate through it.
Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
You like, you share, or comment. Sundan SBS Filipino sa Facebook.